do you have the right to keep and bear arms? Does that mean that you should?
We're not giving a special privilege to women. We're just saying you're not allowed to think about this.
If you do not feed your child something that they're willing to eat, that is tantamount to child abuse.
The institution of democracy breaks the ideal of everyone who is within a certain place deserves the same rights.
Philosophers.
Philosophers.
All right, David.
I have a topic this week.
I will hear your topic.
What counts as a fair society?
Oh, boy. I guess that depends on what a reasonable person might think.
This is basically the question that underpins all of politics, if you think about it.
Yeah, kind of. That's so true. All politics is group decision making, and what is the one thing that we always argue about?
What's fair?
What's fair? That's not fair. How do we decide who gets what cookie? Well,
I'm the king, so I get it, and that's fair.
And that's fair
because I have a bigger army than you.
I mean,
you peasant,
and I have a bigger army too. But also because God said so.
Yes. Yeah, so it's doubly fair.
And you should be glad for it.
I stole it fair and square.
I stole it fair and square because I take care of you. How dare you question my right to take your cookie?
Yeah, if not me, then it would be the Normans.
I'm just imagining a bunch of people, like a bunch of dudes named Norman. Like just, yeah, like they all have Norm McDonald's voice. Yeah, Z, give me that cookie, eh? Rest in peace. All right, so let's talk about it, I guess. Do you have something in particular? Like, there's a lot of ways in which I think people would say this about X society is the most fair or not fair.
Well, I think the biggest divide, but we can just come out swinging.
Let's do it.
The biggest divide, I think, in the discussion today about what counts as a fair society is equality versus equity, i.e., equality of opportunity versus equality of outcome.
Mm-hmm.
What is more fair, that we all have the same, you know, chance to do what we want, or that we all end up the same at the end?
Right.
Because I think there's just an assumption in fairness that nobody's treated differently, right?
Right. But
what does being treated differently mean?
That's a good point. Yeah. And I think this also kind of comes down to, I guess in the political realm, in the most technical definitional way, it's rights versus civil rights. Because rights as used, at least in the United States, are considered natural. Like, they're enumerated in the Constitution, but they're kind of just, in the Bill of Rights of the Constitution, they're more acknowledgments of these rights. Like, you just... endowed by your creator rights. And even then it presupposes that we all have a creator.
Well, so, the Constitution doesn't say anything about that, but that's all Declaration of Independence stuff, just appealing to the king, which is a different context.
That's a different context, but I think it's the mindset is similar. Like I think it's fair to argue that most, if not all, of the rights in the Bill of Rights are talking about everyone. Maybe not at the time, because there were some particular, all people, if you will.
Yeah, whatever those are.
Yeah, we just had to work out what people meant, you know, for the next 150 years or so. Mm-hmm. But that seems to have worked pretty well once you expanded the definition of people to include, you know, property owners, women, and people of other races.
Right.
You know.
And non-property owners.
But like, civil rights are a bit different because it's guarantees made to you by the government. Like they're essentially entitlements.
Mm-hmm.
Really. But they're also, at least in their implementation in the United States and a lot of parts of the West, they're also kind of divvied out by group.
Yes.
Well,
yeah, because the way that we got our feelings about, okay, there should be special, or maybe not even, maybe not special entitlements given to people by the government. Well, and why do we feel this way? Well, because some group that we can identify by a demographic, we feel like is not being treated fairly.
Right.
Like, so we're going to explicitly draw lines in the law and say, we're going to treat these people fairly. And here's what we mean by that.
Right. So for example, there isn't necessarily a right to property in the Bill of Rights.
Right. You're not going to get your government-issued land to live on or whatever.
No, but there is kind of the implied right to own property.
Right.
And so...
Right, it would be wrong of the government to say you cannot own that, even though you paid for it.
Yeah, it's not as explicit, but it kind of be that way. I think it's the Fourth Amendment, right? That's like there's the third. Which one's the quartering troops that got like...
That's the third.
That's the third. Yeah, that one got expanded pretty hard into... Well, what it actually means is you in particular have right to use your properties you see fit, and the government can't take your property and use it the way they would want to, like in the troops mm-hmm. example.
Except for when they can... And we call it eminent domain.
TM later.
Which is not in the Constitution, I don't think.
No, but there's a lot of things that may not be.
Actually, there might be something in there.
Interstate commerce? No.
Well, interstate commerce, but also I think there is stuff about like just compensation and things like that that might be used to underpin
maybe
eminent domain. But this is not an episode about eminent domain.
Next week. or later. But the main thing about it was, is that, okay, so now that we've included like women as people, right? So mm-hmm. now this right would extend to them. So even though on paper, though, they have the right to have property and use it as they see fit, people may not want to give that to them. I.e., for example, I may own a house and I may not want to sell it to a spinster or an older unmarried woman. It's like, that's not moral for me. I don't think that's right. I think that this should go to a man, right? I think she should have a husband and this is a family home and I believe it goes to families, right? Mm-hmm. I'm being prejudiced and discriminating. And so even though
Or I think it would be considered even worse if like you have a bank and you won't give a loan to a woman to buy a house, right?
Exactly.
So it's not just one guy refusing to sell his house, but it's like the bank, of which there might be only one in this town.
Sure.
Refusing to give someone the means to buy a home.
Yeah.
Just because of their demographics. Yeah.
Yeah. The example doesn't really matter. But the point is that that's a bit more, you know, impactful, I think. But the point is that, okay, but they have the right to that. And the bank's like, sure. Yeah. Someone, I don't argue that someone could give them a loan, but not me.
Yeah. But I won't. Yeah.
And, that becomes really important if you're in certain areas where, well, no one will give you a loan and it stymies your ability to actualize that right. So civil rights was brought in to make up for that by essentially saying, well, we're going to pretend, no, she has a special protection to be offered a loan and you can't decide to not give her that loan because of
just on that basis.
On that basis. So it's an effort to help actualize the right. So this is like the first thing where some people I feel like are like, yep, that's the most fair outcome because now banks are loaning to all people for non-discriminatory reasons. So that's more fair in society where she could get a loan. Like if you took a man and a woman who had the same credit score, they could both get a loan.
If we're the same on paper, we can both get a loan. Yeah.
Right. Other people would say that it's less fair because in order to entitle someone to that outcome, you had to take a choice off the table of the bank, mm-hmm. which is kind of infringing on their right to run their business the way they see fit, even if it's for a bad reason.
Give their money to whom they see fit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because maybe it's not even a family values thing, right? Maybe the banker just has this belief that women are dishonest, right? And they're not going to pay back their loan. Like,
yeah, he had a really bad divorce.
But, and we can look this as outsiders and say that's ridiculous and unfair. But, I mean, but what if he's right, though?
Well, who gets to say? That's where this all comes
exactly,
down to.
Right.
Who gets to say? And I think this is where it all comes down to. Now, there's a side effect of this that's worth mentioning, is that another reason why some people might think this is unfair is that, well, in order to bring this particular group, because it's not going to be this woman gets the right, it's women, this mm-hmm. group, because the government deals with groups of people.
Well, and it's not even that. It's just that you can't discriminate on the basis of sex.
Sure.
We don't even say women get this right. It's just that this category is not even the right word. This attribute is not something that you're allowed to consider when making deals with people.
That's fair. Yeah.
We put it that way so that it's not, we're not making, we're not giving a special privilege to women. We're just saying you're not allowed to think about this.
Not with that, no. So maybe that example I should hold until we get to the Title IX discussion, because that literally is what that is.
Yes.
So that's the beginning of civil rights, is you just cannot discriminate based on this, period.
Right.
Following on down the line, though, you then end up with things like Title IX, which literally are that, or the titles, which is, I don't know the exact text of Title IX, but it essentially says that if you're going to offer some type of a program, you must offer, like, you must offer that program for all people of all character, protected characteristics or whatnot, for example. And this gets interesting because essentially it's, if you are of one of these protected characteristics, or you differ from what is, and this is the other thing too, is you have to define, you have to cut people up into these groups, and then depending on the implementation, you may find yourself giving additional access that people normally wouldn't have, but also additional protections that if you don't fall into those groups, you may not normally have, you know, and that's not so much, I think, something we've seen too much in the United States, but it's definitely something that we've seen in Canada, for example. And they have a particular historical case that makes that very interesting. The Quebecers, or the Quebecois, or whatever, you know, being a non-Canadian, wheel and deal your language of choice.
The diet, but somehow angrier French.
Right, who want to be French harder than France does.
The French with something to prove.
Exactly.
As I think I've said on this show before.
Right. And so as non-Canadians, obviously our interpretations of this are going to be somewhat more limited. Do we want to throw a recommendation out for anyone who's more interested in that? Does he earn the right?
I think we've talked about him on here before.
All right.
JJ McCullough.
Yeah. Great YouTube channel. Good Canadian who talks about North America, because he has to talk about Canada as well.
Well, because he's one of the honest Canadians who admits that Canadian culture and American culture are basically the same thing.
They're very similar. Yeah.
There's only a few differences that come specifically with being Canadian.
Right. And being in the Commonwealth and all that. Mm-hmm. But like one thing that they have that's particularly interesting is like guaranteed rights to French Canadians. So like one of them is that, and if you've ever watched anything to do with like Canadian government, there's everything is in English and in French.
Right.
In particular.
I think it might be the only country in the world that has two official languages.
I don't know that that's true. I think Swiss has four or five. Like German, Romansh, French, and something else, I think.
Okay.
But I don't know how, I am much less an expert in how they work, but in Canada, it's particularly interesting because if you are a French Canadian, you are guaranteed the right to read official things. And honestly, I don't even know if it's just official things. It might extend to other things as well, where if you walked into like a McDonald's and there's not French on the menu, you can actually file a complaint, an official complaint, to have McDonald's put the menu items on there in French as well. Like you are entitled to be able to read things in French in Canada because you get this special favor, even in places that are like far from your designated region.
In Alberta or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. You can be in British Columbia on the whole other end of Canada. And it's like, well, I better see road signs in French. Like,
I don't know if they do have the road signs in French out there. Maybe they do.
Or maybe they just got, maybe instead of putting words on their road signs, they just use symbols, and because those are not endemic to any language. Mm-hmm. But also like in their education system, every citizen of Canada has to learn about French Canadian culture, because there might be French Canadians attending their school and they're entitled to learn about their culture. You know, there's some weird provisions like that. The point I'm getting at is that as soon as you start looking into equity, you have to start looking, you have to start then deciding who is not getting favorable outcomes. And then you have to treat that group differently in order to guarantee those outcomes. And so you,
right. And it creates this weird paradox of, we have to treat you differently so that you're treated the same.
Right. Yeah. we have to treat you differently so that you get the same.
Right.
I think. But the only way to do that is to create either special privileges for them, or, but actually it's just special privileges. Either they get access to things that most people don't get access to, or other people are restricted from things that they're not restricted from, which is kind of the same thing, really, in outcome, because it's, we're making sure that only certain people have access to certain things.
Yeah, we've created a weird type of first-class citizen that gets something that others don't.
Right. So is that fair, David?
I mean, good question. I mean,
yeah, who knows? I think it wholeheartedly depends on your opinion about this, but my gut on it is that it's not fair. Like I am
basically apprehensive to treating people differently under the law.
Well, it's a slippery slope in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because how fine do you draw the gradations? And then what do you draw that basis on?
Well, and also, just because a certain group is having trouble today doesn't mean they always will.
That's right.
But if you give them special privileges in the law and that history is always there, there's going to be pushback when you try to take that off the books later and be like, look, guys, that they don't have that same problem anymore. We can take this off the books. Wow, you're some kind of bigot, right? You hate these people. You want them to be oppressed again like they were 100 years ago or however far in the past it is mm-hmm. when the law was put in place, right? And so they just become forever first class.
Right. Or, well, and well, the other thing to consider, well, what happens if there's a dependency formed? Because people, what happens if the only reason they stay that way is because of these special incentives? Like, and I don't see that so much with like the bank example, but you hear this a lot when it comes to entitlements for people of like, okay, income level. That's like one of the most direct ways to guarantee certain outcomes where it's, well, everyone deserves food. Okay. Well, if you create a system in where if you make under a certain amount of money, you will be guaranteed food stamps. In the US, we have this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happens when people optimize their lifestyle to make just enough money to where, because you've essentially created a gap where in order for you
to... Yeah, if I make one more dollar, now I have to buy groceries.
Right. So it's like, well, I would be better off like taking a pay cut. Like, good example. Say you have to make $50,000 a year in order to no longer qualify for food stamps, but your food budget for the year is like, we'll just make it easy and say you get $1,000 a month for food. Maybe a bit much. I don't know. It doesn't matter. But just throw it as an example.
Number.
Yeah. So you would need to make $12,000 more than that a year. You'd have to make $62,000 a year to have the exact same life. So any job advancement that doesn't give you that jump, this like greater than 10% jump.
It's a net loss.
No, yeah. 20% jump is a net loss. So why would you take it? Well, it's kind of hard to create for businesses to create these ladders like this with differently spaced rungs.
Mm-hmm.
Because in order for a person to justify for that, you now need to be magically 20% overnight more useful. It just doesn't add up.
Right. Yeah, you basically just have to change fields, right? You just have to find a higher paying job.
Right. Or get married to somebody who together you now make over the 100,000. Like you now make 120, but your food bill's doubled. And so now you may need to go lower. Like the point is that when the government sets out a framework for how ideally these things would work, the response is almost always what is the most optimal way to operate?
As soon as you have
a
system, people game the system, right?
Right. And
because they're not stupid. Right.
And even if it's not the people, right. Cause I think a lot of people are getting, I can imagine someone listening to this.
Yeah, it's not even necessarily that they're sitting around scheming about it.
No, but like businesses
But they know the consequences. Yeah.
Yeah, but the businesses might, right?
Right.
So if I am Walmart or McDonald's and I'm employing a bunch of people who are on food stamps, I am aware that I cannot offer raises into this range. Like there's a dead zone of where I can offer ranges. So I don't even have to offer salaries in that range. Why would I pay people anymore without jumping the gap? And then people won't ask me for raises into that gap.
Yeah, because they know.
Yep. So, but because I'm going to have to make them make a 20-ish percent gap jump, well, great. I can stack a bunch of responsibility on that jump, and that will further disincentivize people to keep them at this entry level.
Mm-hmm.
And if there are other jobs that also can't offer them this mid-step, to get to the next step after that, it keeps people in my entry level. Because that's, you know, with the Pareto distribution being the way it is, I need a lot of cheap labor. You know, with the breakdown of what I need a lot of cheap labor. So I'm going to optimize my staffing or personnel strategy to maximize this as much as possible. And the government keeps them there. Because not because they want them to stay poor, it's because they don't want them to starve. I'm not saying this had a bad intention behind it. But companies will just strategize around it where it's like, well, why would I create these advancement positions that allow people to move up the ladder and get better paying jobs over time when I can funnel people and make the neck of the funnel so tight that only a few slip through a year, and I just keep a nice labor pool of like roughly $50,000 a year employees. Mm-hmm. And I will structure myself to squeeze as much as I can out of a $50,000 a year employee, not because I hate them, but because I have to, because I'm incentivized to do so. It actually doesn't benefit me to pay them anymore, and it doesn't benefit them either. So they won't, they're not incentivized to ask for it.
Right.
You know, so even if it's not the people who are getting food stamps, it's the companies they work for. You're creating a class of the workforce that, thanks to a special entitlement, no longer has the pressure to push up, so they won't.
And of course, this is where the UBI folks come in, right? That UBI removes that perverse incentive, right? Because if everyone gets a paycheck anyway from the government, then every dollar you earn more, you still get to keep.
Sure. And there, I think, is an argument about, well, just raising the floor, but mm-hmm. that's a different discussion. But at least you're right. You're not creating a second class. You're not creating a special class citizen who, while they're getting this additional benefit, they're also, that has to come with a, it's a give and take, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You can get rid of the, well, if I make another dollar, I won't qualify for food stamps, by saying everyone qualifies for food stamps.
Right. But if everyone qualifies, why would they not take them?
Right. I would.
Yeah. Free money.
If I just got free money for groceries, I would take it. Yeah.
But then you end up with a situation where it's like, well, wait a minute. Well, now we need to raise taxes. Cool. So now everyone's essentially being forced.
I'm still buying groceries, just in a, I'm buying groceries with extra steps. Like,
well, not just extra steps, but now I can only buy I have to buy certain kinds of groceries. And this is right, another
the ones
thing.
That are qualified to be paid for under food stamps.
And that's a whole other thing. Food manufacturers are fully aware of what can or can't be food stamped.
Right.
And they will lobby to make sure their stuff is food stamp approved, but other things are not. Or in the case of larger companies, well, they can set the criteria. They can work with, they are food experts, right? Because the government's not experts on food. They're experts on writing laws, supposedly.
Yeah, if anything.
If anything, that's supposed to be the thing. Governing is their skill set. Okay, cool. Well, we're going to reach out to industry experts about what should or shouldn't be food stamped. Cool. Well, who has the most industry experts? The bigger companies. It would be very convenient if we created a very structured program where the only food stamp approvable chicken happens to be the way Tyson makes chicken. Mm-hmm. And the way we make chicken is at economies of scale. So anyone else who tries to replicate
a small poultry farmer could never qualify.
Yep.
And so everyone who's using food stamps to buy their groceries only buys Tyson chicken.
Yep.
And the other farmers go out of business.
It's a captive audience. Yep. So people are gaming on all sides of this. Mm-hmm. And that's a side effect you get. Now, don't get me wrong. Did you achieve your outcome? Arguably, yes. There should be no reason
everyone's getting something
starves.
To eat. Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody should starve. But what was the price that was paid? You know, and who paid it? And spoiler alert, a lot of people think that it's more of a mentality of, well, we're going to take from this group of people to give to this group of people. But in reality, you're robbing from the public coffers. Like it impacts everyone, you know, even those people you claim to help. You just took an avenue away by creating a box for them, you know, in that way. And I think that's unfair because that's ultimately my big opinion about why dividing people into groups like this is unfair, is because the only way you can give them additional opportunities is to, you know, I'm not saying it has to be this way, but it just seems to be a cosmic rule of the universe that in order to ensure certain things happen, you have to take other options off the table, usually for them, just not in ways that you imagined, mm-hmm. which means and this is where one of the slippery slopes comes in, which is where now you need to regulate these cases and now you're whack-a-moling trying to keep it from being abused, or which won't ever happen because the lobbyists for this are going to be the ones who are pulling the strings, right? Or you get into a case where it's like, well, what does it mean to be poor and need food stamps? And it's like, is it this amount of money or that amount of money? Or do we maybe bracket it? You know, does it matter how many kids you have? You know, and then you can keep subdividing people, you know, into more and more groups, you know, and people will begin to fight over who deserves the most incentives, right? Mm-hmm. And this always happens in the tax code, right? You could argue that the U.S. tax code, by its exemptions, creates separate classes of individuals and businesses, right? Like farmers have special rights as a business over other businesses. So do banks.
Yep.
Banks are one of the only groups that have the right to lend more money than they have. Like, and that's just totally fine. You know, and everyone wants to argue for why they're special. You know, I forget who said it, but as soon as you, I think it may have been Milton Friedman, he talked about this, as soon as you carve out an exception, everyone's going to argue that they should be accepted mm-hmm. for some reason. And then if everyone's exempt, no one is, right? Or you might as well not even have the law in the first place. And that to me is unfair, especially because now it goes right back to being a battle of, well, who has the resources to negotiate? You know, farmers can band together and join a farm bureau and then have a way more power to swing. Whereas and then that creates a whole other situation where if you're not a part of the farm bureau, well, now you don't get special rights. Like you had a really interesting example of this come up when you were talking about, I think, RC Aviation.
Okay.
Do you remember, I think you were telling me about I think it was drone stuff where it's like,
you know, about the local club who operates out of a park.
Maybe. I thought it had something more to do with that. It's like the civilian arm of the FAA that talks about like who can or cannot operate, RC aircraft under certain rules. I can't remember if this is what it was.
No,
okay. Is that a different thing?
The only thing that I could think of a complaint about RC Aviation is that there's a local club who operates out of a park. It's a public park, which is paid for by local taxes, but they have exclusive jurisdiction to use it for RC Aviation. So you have to be a member of their club, a paid member of their club, to use it, even though it's a public park.
Yeah, that might be it. But you could see how that could expand to even being bigger than that. Like, for example, the FAA can't regulate and offer licenses for RC pilots. Like, say they, for some reason, they can't do that. Well, but if they give special privileges to this national club to do this licensing or whatever, well, then they can de facto set roles for that, you know. Mm-hmm. But it cuts the middleman out. If you're not a part of their group, then you don't get the special privilege to fly for club activities, which may include things that you would want to do anyway, just mm-hmm. as an example, right? And there may be good or bad reasons for that, but either way, it's creating a separate class and benefiting one particular group, and that group just happens to have the weight to throw, you know, like farmers in my previous example. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just, it's kind of unfair because you're forcing association, right? And we have the right to freely associate, but in causing us to not be able to freely associate, you're also kind of forcing us to associate to get advantages as well, mm-hmm. right? Like, I may want to not do business with certain people and you force me to do so, but now you're also having to force me, if I'm wanting to actualize things that I could have just done before, now I have to game my way through it. And it's entering into these complex negotiations that favor groups, which the government's more than happy to do because that's how they operate, especially in democracies where it's a game of groups, mm-hmm. not a game of individuals, you know?
Right. See our prior episode about how all democracies devolve into identity politics.
Facts. Now, I think this whole conversation about whether it's fair or not fair, there's going to be a pretty evenly split pool probably about who thinks what, but I think it gets into special areas too, because there are old standing traditional ones that have always existed but maybe not been obvious. I think maybe these are the ones that you had talked about before. Children,
mm-hmm.
they get special privileges. For example, can you assault a child like in the traditional way? Like, can you punch a child? No, that's illegal. No. That's assault.
But you can't do that to an adult either, though.
No. But there's a special crime that you also commit, child abuse.
Right. Right. We decided that's worse than punching an adult. Yes.
Mm-hmm. If I see a homeless person on the street and decide...
Although, is it...
Do you have to be their guardian to do that?
I was going to say, is it child abuse if you just punch somebody else's kid? Like, I don't know.
I don't know. I'd have to read the code to see what it says.
Yeah.
Now, one where it doesn't have to be yours is the other thing that's very similar, and I would argue is the same as children. Animal abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Animals have special rights.
They do.
Arguably. But maybe that's to compensate for the fact that they don't have the regular rights.
Right. Yeah, animals can be held as property.
Yeah.
And are.
Right. Much like children, we just won't admit it.
True. Yeah, we're afraid to admit that children are property. It makes us uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Well, but it's true though.
In
basically every sense of the word, as we treat it in our society, they are
much like your pet. Yeah.
Yeah.
With extra steps.
Your child is not free to come and go as they please.
Right.
You can summon them back and the government will get them for you if, mm-hmm. if they have to.
That's an interesting one. Yeah. Like, yeah, if your child runs away from home because they're mad about not getting tendies for dinner, for example.
Right. You can call the police and they will start a search party to find them and bring them back.
Yep.
Because it's your child.
Yep.
And yeah, so long as it's not because you were an abusive parent, right, who is not fit to have a child.
Yep.
They'll return them to you and that's job well done.
Job well done. Yeah. This is a good tangent to go down because I found mm-hmm. this to be very interesting. So with the advent of social media, I have seen some hilarious things occur. So a similar example, it may not have been tendies, but like it, I love that example because it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But I have seen kids who have argued with their parents saying that if you do not give me tendies, because that's all I can eat.
It's child abuse.
Yeah, it's right. child abuse and I'm going to call the police on you.
Mm-hmm.
And the kid does.
I haven't seen this.
What do you think happened? Okay, I'm going to ask you two things. What do you think should happen and what realistically ought to happen, you think? If a kid calls the police saying that
nothing should happen, the 911 operator should say this is for emergencies only.
Let me clarify.
Okay.
They don't call and just say parents won't give me tendies because mm-hmm. they even know that that's ridiculous. Instead, they call and say my parents are refusing to feed me
mm-hmm.
and I'm being abused, right? So okay. 911 operator hears that. Well, okay, now proceed with right. what should happen, what does happen.
Okay, police get dispatched.
Yep.
They show up.
Child welfare check. Yep.
Yep. So they're going to detain and interrogate the parents mm-hmm. and figure out what's going on.
Yep.
When they see that there is a plate of some food in front of the child that they don't want to eat, they're going to quickly conclude that, okay, you're not refusing to feed your child. Your child is being picky and has overreacted and has abused the emergency line.
Yep.
And that's going to be the end of it.
Okay. That's what you think should happen?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, what do you think actually happens?
I do expect that that's what actually happened.
Okay. You're mostly correct.
Yeah.
However, now these parents have a record.
Mm.
So what do you think happens the second time they call?
Okay.
About something else. My parents are abusing me by not allowing me to sleep, i.e. they would not let me sleep past 10 a.m. They made me wake up and get out of bed and go to school or whatever. Okay. Well, second time, police see it. Eye roll. The cop who did it answered the call last time sees it, eye rolls and thinks bratty kid. But you know who else gets dispatched the second time? Child Protective Services.
Yeah.
CPS is kind of like a hammer. It looks for nails.
Mm-hmm.
And to be fair, that is their job. They're overzealous in their mission to protect children.
Right. They're not there to protect the parents. That's the opposite of their job.
They are advocates for children. Okay. How much evidence do you think CPS needs before they can take your children from you?
Not very much.
I was going to say too little, but that's an opinion, right? Mm-hmm. And it goes down that rabbit hole. Now, I am overgeneralizing. There's a lot of sway back and forth about how this goes, but this is an area where people also argue about what is fair. What is fair? Some parents might say that, well, if you do not feed your child something that they're willing to eat, that is tantamount to child abuse. Forcing your child to eat something they do not like is abuse. That's some people's opinion. And what is fair is that parents feed their kids something that they will eat.
Yeah, but at the same time, feeding your kid unhealthy things and causing malnutrition by that route is also child abuse.
Yeah, but see, this
right?
is if America.
All I feed my children is plates of French fries, right? And they're, you know, start having strokes at age 15. Like, that's also child abuse.
Maybe. I think in America, though, with the American healthcare system, you fed them vegetables as far as the government was concerned. looked good to me. childhood obesity is not a disease, according to the American healthcare system. But,
okay.
No, yeah, exactly. This is one of those things. But the one thing that's not argued is that they're special and they get special privileges.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is one where I'm actually kind of okay with it because they are a special case. But that's because they don't get rights in general. Now, whether they should is an interesting discussion because mm-hmm. I think it's an all or nothing type deal. They either have rights or they don't. Or they either have the normal rights that all Americans or people, that's the next thing we'll get to, have. So let's see, what does that mean? Well, freedom of speech, religion, assembly, press, and what was the other one? Associate? No, that's assembly. Or is association assembly different in the First Amendment? I can't remember what the five things are.
I don't think there is freedom of association in the First Amendment.
I think it's just assembly that gets
yeah.
extracted to that. So it's assembly, religion, speech, and press. What's the other one that I'm forgetting? There's a fifth one.
Is there?
I think there is. Look at me being a bad American.
Mm-hmm.
I'll look it up real quick. Yeah, but they either get those rights. Okay, so that seems fine. I think most people would be like, yeah, I think kids get that. That's fine. Well, then you get to the Second Amendment.
Right.
Bear arms. That's one where most
and
people
And now
go,
we have a problem with it. Yeah.
Wait a minute. Yeah. Most people, but and this is one where it kind of comes down to it, because I don't know about you. I got my first firearm when I was 12.
Yeah, me too.
So but that's an opinion, man.
Like, well, yes. And it was, of course, under close supervision at all times. And also I was 12, right? We have different opinions about different ages of children, right?
Sure.
Buying a 22 rifle for a 12-year-old so that you can take them to the range and they can learn how to shoot is different from like giving a handgun to a 6-year-old and just saying, have fun.
Or that 6-year-old going to the gun store and being like, I have money. My money's green, ain't it?
Right.
You don't have the right to discriminate against me. My money's green, ain't it?
Right, that's ageism.
Yeah, I'll take that Glock 19, please.
Right.
We'll see about that homework assignment. it's petition. That's the one I forgot.
Oh,
petition
okay,
your
yeah.
government, yeah. Anyway, but like... So yeah, that's just we get the second one, we're already hung up, and there's all the other ones where it's like, do they even have houses that can
right,
be
right, the whole
quartering
soldiers, well... Yeah, they probably don't, but in principle, they could.
Could they? Can children enter into legal agreements?
Well, no. Yeah, we decide. Yeah, and the reason why they don't have rights and why we give them special privileges is because they're stupid.
Yep. We all collectively agreed.
They are physically not capable of rational thought.
Yep.
In the way we expect adults to be able to. Yep. And so all of the cultural... philosophical presuppositions we make when we decide how society is going to work assumes a well-functioning adult brain, which children don't have.
Yep.
So, no. Yeah. They don't get to have firearms because they can't think through the consequences of what happens when you abuse those.
They can't sign for a loan.
They can't sign for a loan because they don't understand the obligations that they're signing up for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So, in this case, I think the disadvantages that children face by not even really being people, again, property, they weigh out. So it's like, you don't have anything, but in order to differentiate you from the family dog, we are going to give you other special privileges, though, because we need to tide you over until you do have these rights.
Well, and we want to prepare you for when you do. Yeah.
Right. And we don't want you to be disadvantaged up to that point where it's like you have literally nothing. And anything could have happened to you.
Right. You have to wait till your 18th birthday to be able to do anything. Right.
Right.
There should be some sort of gradual process where you become an adult. Yeah.
Yeah. So in my mind, it's fair. But because we started from you're essentially no different than a cardboard box, and we don't agree that you should be treated like a cardboard box, so we're going to outline some special provisions from you up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with pets. Pets will never have the rights that humans have, I think.
Yeah, probably.
Probably not. But we also don't, people like their pets. And so they don't, they looked at the template we laid out for children and were like, they're kind of like our kids. We shouldn't abuse them either. Okay, let's make laws about it, because just like any other law that gets made, people did a thing and we didn't like it. and they didn't suffer consequences for it because there wasn't a law. Well, sounds like a law needs to be made for this. And that's where it came from. I'd be willing to bet dollars to donuts is some guy.
Yeah, that's the most obvious way that that would have happened. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Some guy whipped his dog with a switch and people were like, that's horrible. I heard that dog crying from my house and I didn't like it. So I think that should be illegal. And I'm not happy with the police telling me they can't do anything about it. So, well, dogs aren't people. Let's go like, what's sub people? Kids. There's a template, you know? And then they took some of the things from that and applied it to pets because they're still not quite kids, but they're not quite boxes either. And then that's pretty much it. You have, and I think one thing we might end up seeing at some point, which would be very interesting, is like environmental protection laws, which are a thing, but different. Like, oh, you happen to have this rare species of flower on your property. Too bad. You want to put a driveway there.
Oh, well, I mean, that already kind of exists.
It does. Yeah.
If there's, so okay, this is a, okay. You and I both hate, homeowners associations.
We do. Yeah.
One of my favorite, stories of people trolling their own homeowners associations who wouldn't let them do what they wanted to do is to build a structure in their backyard that bats can live in because a certain species of endangered bat will take residence in it, and then it becomes illegal to destroy it because it's a habitat of an endangered animal.
Or planting some kind of endangered grass in your lawn that it's illegal to cut.
Right. Oh, you can't tell me to mow my lawn. It's illegal for me to mow my lawn.
I'm okay with this exception. That's actually fair. Because all's fair in love and war. Mm-hmm. And I love to go to war with HOAs.
With Nazis, yeah.
With actual real life Nazis, yeah. Okay. Yeah, So, I don't know. I guess that's where I'm at. Where I would draw the line where it does become fair to create a separate class because they are different, and we don't give them anything. We start from scratch and then build rights up for them again, which is not the case for previously I guess bigoted against groups of people, women, non-whites, like that. We want them to have all the rights, and we gave them all the rights, but now we're giving them other things. But the other one that's been kind of, I think, under people's noses that also doesn't get brought up a lot is, what about citizens versus non-citizens? So this is one.
Isn't a person a person?
Yeah. And I think this is very interesting because I actually don't know. I believe that the United States Constitution, the Bill of Rights, I believe it should apply to everyone under its purview. So if you're on an island that is an American protectorate where the Constitution applies, like American Samoa, great. You have all the rights. You're a person. Like, we are not, it doesn't say citizens have the right to. The closest is maybe in the Second Amendment where it says the people.
Right, but what does the people mean?
Yeah, who are the people?
But I think we always assume that the people is the citizens. And one reason for that, who gets to cast votes in elections? The people.
The people, the citizenry.
Right, so do foreigners get to cast votes when they're visiting?
No.
Right.
But do they get
so we decided that they don't get the same rights as citizens.
Right. But do they get some of the rights, like speech?
Yeah, they do get some rights. I don't know if there's any case law about free speech for foreigners, but I do know that foreigners visiting do get certain legal entitlements.
Due process rights, yeah.
Right. Yeah, we can't just throw them in jail for fun. Right. They also are entitled to due process of law if they're accused of a crime.
Yeah, I'm looking this up now because I'm kind of curious.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's actually things in the code about this.
Well, that makes sense. There should be.
Okay, there is a particular section that got brought out with this. In 1903, the court in the Japanese immigration case reviewed the legality of deporting an alien who had lawfully entered, clarifying that an alien who has entered the country has become subject in all respects to its jurisdiction and part of its population, could not be deported without, quote, opportunity to be heard upon the questions involving its right to be and remain. That's one. But that made me think of another one, which was the whole Japanese internment camp thing that involved both citizens and non-citizens, and they kind of, we could just kind of look the way other way on that one. Yeah, it looks like, according to this, it really depends. Like, it's assumed no unless there's Supreme Court case law that says yes. So, for example, this is where one of the places where due process was either originated or upheld as extending to non-citizens. So the Supreme Court kind of has the right to determine by amendment what also applies and how to non-citizens. So that's probably where the First Amendment getting applied to non-citizens, there's probably a case about that. There are probably cases on the books about the Second Amendment applying or not to non-citizens. But in this case, it was the due process right. Like, oh yeah, well, all people should have this right, but only the people, i.e. the citizenry, get this one. And this is where things like votes and stuff came from. And I think that most people would also, I think, and this is one where I think people may disagree, do non-citizens count or not? Like, I think that, you know, in one way, it makes sense because you're given extra privileges because you're also held to other things, right? Like, for example, the United States government can't draft non-citizens. Right. Okay. So that's a privilege, arguably, that non-citizens have, is that they can't be drafted, but they don't get to vote, whereas citizens do. Mm-hmm. But because you get to vote, you also get the other end of it. Taxes is an interesting one.
Yeah. Non-citizens still have to pay taxes,
which is a bit weird because that was kind of our whole rallying cry initially.
Taxation without representation.
Yeah.
Well, I think the thing there, though, was that the colonists were citizens, though. And they were still being taxed without being represented.
Maybe. I don't know enough about that. It made sense.
Like, right? I don't think anyone would have been, you know, sticking up for the whatever French visitors were visiting England and having to pay taxes on things while they were there.
Right.
But when you are living I think they saw it the same way. Like, if Parliament just decided that Oxfordshire doesn't get to have representation in Parliament now because we decided, but we're still going to tax them, right? That would be a closer case, yeah, to what the colonies were arguing about. It's like, yeah, okay, we're still here. We're still living under your laws. And we don't have a home country to go back to, right? This is our home.
Right.
But you're still imposing duties on us without giving us the privileges afforded to other citizens.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. I am curious, though, to wonder if you could create a country where everyone present did get all rights. Like, that would be an interesting model to look at. Like, all it takes to be a citizen is to just be present. Like, if you are in the borders, you're a citizen now. If you leave the borders, you're no longer a citizen. I think that is
a recipe for disaster.
Oh, really? Think so?
Yes.
I kind of agree, but I want to know why you think it might be kind of
a disaster. Well, I mean, the most obvious thing is the right to vote.
Okay, so
foreign government wants to put a puppet in place. Well, they're just going to send a bunch of people over for a vacation in America, and they're right before election day, and they show up and cast votes for their puppet that they want to put in place, and then they all leave.
Fair. But do you think that's a weakness? But arguably, the same thing could happen with influence.
It could, but then it's still the opinion of the citizens, which we decided is the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to wonder if that's more of an issue with democracy, though.
Well, I agree. Yeah.
So
I think the institution of democracy breaks the ideal of everyone who is within a certain place deserves the same rights.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Because we have to draw the line at least at voting so that foreign powers can't game our system against us.
Interesting. So what if you didn't have a democracy?
Then sure.
Like a constitutional monarchy. So the monarch... Because that's, I think, one thing that is traditionally advantageous about a constitutional monarchy is that the monarch kind of, while they may not have a whole lot of power, do serve as like a conservative anchor to the country's principles. Like, mm-hmm, what it means. Like, if you look at like the British royal family, they are peak British, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, and they preserve the culture and the tradition of their country. So it does not matter how many people come in and vote for whatever. they could arguably dig in and not allow something if they really wanted to. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they ever would, because that's a, you're asking for something there. I feel like that would be a civil war. That would be really
awkward.
Yeah,
I feel like the British monarchy has lasted this long because it doesn't really interfere anymore.
But it could.
Right. But it's been a long time since they did, and people would probably be very upset.
Maybe. I think it depends. Like, I'm imagining the scenario you talked about where a bunch of foreigners come in and they flood the vote, mm-hmm. right? And then the British monarchy steps in and says, nope, this is a concentrated effort to essentially disrupt our sovereignty. So we're going to nullify this vote.
Right, the election is just canceled. Null. Yeah, yep. We'll do it again.
Yeah, we're going to disband Congress, or the
Parliament,
yeah. And we're going to make y'all do it again after purging out these people that mm-hmm. were foreign adversaries. I think that's a recipe for a great civil war. But I also feel like it would be a true civil war where there would be pretty evenly split, because those who were citizens, because you're only having to topple a little bit, right? Like, you know, on paper, it's like, well, obviously that would be ludicrous. Like, if you look at the United States, there's maybe, what, 250 million eligible voters, something like that. I don't know if we count the 350 million as like voting age or just total. I don't know how that works in the census, but let's just say, for an example, we've got 200 million eligible voters. You know, it's not that you have to get 200 more million people in to vote out that interest. You just need to break ties in the right places, right? That's all that would need to happen. But, you know, I don't know. That would be interesting to see get pulled off, and be weird. I do, though, think that it is a bit... while we're talking about it, there are kind of two kinds of non-citizens, right? There are the normal non-citizens and then the special get privileges non-citizens, like the diplomatic privileges that some mm-hmm. get. That's a bit different. Also, not all countries treat all people from other places equally either.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even in the United States, you can just kind of tell by the way we structure our border system, it's not the same. Because there are just clear open swaths along the Canadian border where it's not a problem. And if you wandered into America from Canada, it's like, you're probably not going to get caught. Whereas if you try to wander in from Mexico, you might get caught, you know. If you're from certain countries that are not, that are, what are they called? The American Protectorate, I think is what it is. That, like, those are several countries like the Federated States of Micronesia and stuff like that aren't America. They're their own countries, but mm-hmm. you're an American national or something like that, and you can just freely immigrate to the United States, but you're still kind of a second class citizen, kinda. Mm-hmm. But the Constitution always applied to you. I don't know, it's just weird.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it. It bothers me. I like my boxes, you know. Like, I don't know, I think ideally it would be very simple. I think the government should treat all people under its supervision the same, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you're subject to American rule, you should be afforded the same rights. But yeah, you're right. Democracy does prevent that from being possible.
I thought of a case in which government might all, like the institution of government itself might also create a problem here. Let's go back to the Second Amendment thing,
mm-hmm.
right? Should foreigners be able to carry firearms?
I think so.
Right, I don't have a problem with that. But then, now let's think about the foreign power thing. Okay, the purpose of what is the stated purpose of the Second Amendment?
Keep government tyranny in check.
Right. So, okay, we acknowledge that the purpose of the Second Amendment is so people can have weapons to be able to fight the government. Cool. So that means that if a foreign power wants to basically just start sending their army over...
Let's do it one at a time on commercial airlines.
Right. Yeah. Why launch an invasion per se? Just, yeah, take American Airlines and show up with your guns and wait for the army to be assembled. And they haven't broken any laws yet just by having their munitions and whatnot.
Even better. Don't bother shipping the munitions.
Just buy it
here.
Buy
them here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then launch your attack from within.
That'd be interesting.
Yes.
I would argue that if enough Americans actually actualize their Second Amendment right, that also
in theory should not be a problem,
but practically and speaking, it would be, because most Americans don't take that right very seriously.
Right.
That's a whole other thing.
And are not ready to fight an army.
Right. Yeah. And that's a whole other thing about rights versus responsibilities, where it's like, you have the right to keep and bear arms. Does that mean that you should, A, do it, and B, be prepared to follow up on that right if necessary? And I think there are a lot of people that get real squeamish about that one, because they're like, no one likes to think of themselves in a civil war.
Well, no, we don't want to do that.
No.
The whole point of society is to stop us from fighting with each other. So.
Right. Yeah, I don't know, man. But I think it would be interesting to talk to people on, because I think you and I, we're like you said, one of the things that we made us maybe not want to do this topic was that we fall in line with very similar opinions about this. But I would be very interested to talk to people who aren't of the same opinion about, because I think there are people on both sides of us with different opinions. Like, I think there are some people that lean way more heavily into the citizen should be the first class citizen, and then there's everyone else. And then there are others that maybe held a broader opinion about, like, well, there are different kinds of citizens that deserve different protections for different things. It's like, well, how does that square with some of these other scenarios, right? Like, what about immigrants? What about when they no longer need it, right? Ideally, civil rights should have been the civil rights movement in the United States should have been it was even pitched as a way to levelize, like,
right. It should be a transient thing, right? We're going to do this measure to get everyone on the same footing, and then it should be over, right? We should all be equals now.
Yeah, we're going to just speed up what should have happened naturally because it's not benefiting anyone today.
Yeah, we decided people are being too stubborn about something that we think is important for the way that our society should be. So we're going to do a hard correction, but then it should be undone later, right? Because we shouldn't need it anymore.
And I think that's an interesting one, because I think the fear, you can't prove it necessarily, I don't think, but I would be interested to hear evidence and arguments about, was the civil rights movement actually that effective? Because there are plenty of people who would advocate that the civil rights movement was a good idea, are also the first people to advocate that it didn't go far enough and that we're still facing problems. And I'm like, well, is that not just evidence that it didn't work?
Does that mean we didn't go far enough, or does that mean that it was a failure from the beginning?
Right. And the advancements we made, how much of those can just be attributed to the change in culture and the change of times, right? Like, I feel like most people whose attitudes about minorities, for example, like my attitudes about minorities versus my dad's versus his dad's versus his dad's, you know, if you go back far enough, I don't necessarily think that my opinion about minorities came from the civil rights movement or being taught about it in civics class. It more came from just, I grew up having black friends.
Exposure.
I knew people. They permeated our media. You know, like, I just grew up in different circumstances. I didn't grow up hearing people fret about Jackie Robinson in baseball. Like, that was not, I've just always known that there were black baseball players, white baseball players. Like, I've just always known that to just be how it is. Right. And so is that because of the civil rights movement or not?
Maybe.
You know, maybe, I don't know. I'm not claiming to say it is or isn't, but
yeah, I there could be a case to make about that the civil rights movement didn't change the minds of anyone at the time, but it changed your mind in the future.
Or did it change the right people's minds at the time that led to decisions that led to my mind being changed? But even if we decide that it did, if we were to try to actually measure the impact, was it worth it? Because it didn't come for free. And that's another hard question, because it depends, I guess, on who you ask. I would want to know about those who have benefited from it. Did they think that it was worth it? Was it enough? You know, like, because all I seem to hear is that it wasn't good enough, or it didn't do anything. We're still where we used to be. Like, Jim Crow never went away. It's like, well, then what was the point of any of this then? Because it did come at a cost, you know, if it's not truly effective. At what point would it be effective? You know, or does the fact that the society tends to adapt with the times, right? Like, for example, HOAs I am no friend of HOAs. I would be interested to look into the history of HOAs and see if they were a vehicle to get against equal opportunity housing.
I would not be surprised either to hear that.
Yep. Country clubs and things like private clubs became a thing to keep out. You know, there's the old saying, like, I just think I remember working on one at one point, like, back when I used to work in construction, we went to work on one, and I remember hearing it be said that, well, yeah, this is a highly select group, and the guy I was working with turned to me and said, that means no blacks or Jews. Like, that's what he meant by when he said that. They would never say that, but if you take a minute to look at the attendees of the club, it's like, man, it's kind of, it's like a family reunion in here, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, so, but would that have happened if not for the civil rights, or would it have been worse? You know, I don't know. I just think that when you're making broad sweeps like that and you're cutting your society up into selected groups and giving them special privileges, I don't know that it's worth it. Not to say that the cause isn't necessarily noble. Like, I do tend to think that it is more right morally to treat people equally, and provide them equal access to things, or only discriminate based on things that make sense, right? Like, if you're a credit lender and you discriminate based on someone's ability to repay you, that just makes sense. That's obvious. You're discriminating just like you always have, just on factors that we deem to be okay versus ones we don't deem to be okay, you know? But I don't know. I tend to think it is just more fair, because the moment you take on the challenge of trying to make outcomes guaranteed, you A, have to have a license to writ large make vast sweeping changes to people's lives that you normally don't have the right to do, especially in the United States. Like, we have a lot of protections against how that can even be implemented. And I don't like giving the government that power to affect my outcome, you know, be it for better or worse. I don't trust them to do it. But also, if they can make an outcome better, they can make it worse, you know, and that's just it. Like, it's not a zero sum game, but there are scales in play, right? And I don't know. I just think that we're better off, but who knows? Like, I've also not been historically disadvantaged in the same way necessarily, you know, and maybe I have benefited and I don't know. I just think it's worth discussing if it's actually worth it, because I don't doubt that there is an effect. I just don't know if it was a good effect or if it was worth it. That's where really I'm at. And when it comes down to whether it's fair or not, the most unfair thing is when we all suffer a negative outcome from it over the long run, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you think, dear listener? Is it fair? Is it not fair? I think it would be interesting to talk to some people who have different opinions about it.
Yes, I think this is a topic to revisit at a later time.
Absolutely. But until then, philosophers.
Philosophers. If you like the music in this episode, please check out Jippy on Bandcamp at jippy.bandcamp.com.
Philosophers is supported by viewers like you.
If there's a topic you'd like us to discuss,
or a topic you'd like to see revisited in the future,
please let us know by contacting us using the methods in the description,
or in the comments below. Thank you for listening.